Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top-quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.
Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome to the VS Show, our premiere episode. This is the only show dedicated exclusively to covering mixed martial arts in Atlantic Canada. And over the next few months, we're going to take a closer look at the trainers, the coaches, the commissioners, the promoters, the fighters, and the fans just like you and me who make MMA possible in Atlantic Canada. And I cannot wait to get this show off the road. Before I do one other thing, I have to thank our sponsors. You just heard them listed there a moment ago. I have to put out a personal, heartfelt thanks to Draco Impact Sports, to Farm Box Films, to Reposales.ca, Jack Cameron, Hemmings House Pictures, and Wilson's Titanium Products. Those guys stepped up, no questions asked, to help us get this show off the road, and for that I am eternally grateful. My name is Boyd Sharp. I'm going to be your host every Monday night at 10 p.m. Atlantic. And you may ask, who is Boyd Sharp and what makes him qualified to host an MMA show? Well, I want to go back many years to when I saw my first MMA. It was probably the mid to late 90s. I was at a friend's house, and they were watching what I guess was UFC 1 or 2. And it impacted me deeply. I was horrified. I was mortified. I thought it was disgusting, and I could not watch. I spent the half the evening staring at the label on my beer bottle because I didn't want to watch some guy die in a cage. Not really the most auspicious start to an MMA journalist's foray into the sport. Fast forward many, many, many years. Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner. A lot of you diehards and hardcore fans will roll your eyes and say, oh, God, another one of those guys. But that's how I got into the sport. I'd been away from it. I hadn't seen anything since the original UFC 1 or 2. But when I saw you, Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin, it connected with me in a completely different way. Perhaps I'd gotten over the fact that I was bullied as a kid. Perhaps the sport had evolved into something else that I personally could connect with. But whatever the case, I fell in love. Threw myself completely into the sport, watched, downloaded, bought, stole every bit of MMA I could get my hands on, and eventually got the crazy idea at 40 years of age that I wanted to give it a shot. A few of you may have heard of a little television show called Cubicle to the Cage. Over the course of some 15 months, I trained, did my best to convert myself into a mixed martial artist, stepped into the cage, and got my first taste of the sport as an actual fighter. I've moved on from that now, and I am dying to promote this sport in any way that I can. My prowess as a fighter is perhaps suspect, and I think that through the BS Show I'm going to be able to promote the sport, especially in Atlantic Canada, better than I could standing in the cage getting punched, kicked, and my joints twisted. Skippy, how are we doing? Skippy has radio silence.
I'm sorry. I was lighting a cigarette at the same time you caught me, man. I was like, ah, man, Riley.
Oh, perfect timing. Perfect timing. Yes. Skippy Cohen is in studio running the board. I connected with Skippy as we were going live on television with the Cubicle to the Cage television show. He and Lepaki and the good folks at MMA Madhouse brought us on board to promote the show, break down the show, talk about the show, and it was just a fantastic experience to connect with these guys and find out all that's going on with regional MMA throughout Canada, United States, and around the world. And I had not realized there was a world outside of Zuffa, outside of the UFC and Bellator and the World Series of Fighting, really until I connected with these guys. And there's a lot of great stuff going on out there.
Obviously, we love the partnership with you and Cubicle to the Cage, and we're excited about the bright future of the BS show, especially because we know, as somebody who's worked with you and worked with some of the people that are your friends in the business around your neck of the woods, there's some great talent up there. You guys have some great events. We'll be talking a little bit about Extreme Cage Combat tonight, obviously, but, you know, I'm excited, and for everybody out there, don't let Boyd play down his skills in the cage. It was a great, great fight. Great fight. And I loved it, and I'm proud to call you a friend and honored to have, you know, this relationship to where you can open up the rest of the world's eyes to your region and the Atlantic Canadian MMA scene. There's great talent there, brother. Great talent.
Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate that. And I mean, I'm going to be the first to say that I don't have a lot of answers around MMA. I have an enormous amount of questions. As I said, I've only really been following this this sport since, say, 2007, 2008. But I am very interested and very passionate about it, and especially with local regional MMA. And I'm going to tell a little story that I told the last time I was on the show with you a couple of weeks ago, Skippy. I saw UFC, I guess it was 169 or 170, and it was a somewhat lackluster card. Some people really, really slammed it, but I enjoyed it, but it didn't rock my world. And about a week later, I went to a local show here in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I think it was Extreme Cage Combat 19. And it was just an unbelievably awesome night. There were four amateur fights and six or seven pro fights. And it was just the perfect storm. The athletes, even the amateurs, performed unbelievably. There were super exciting fights. They were extremely technical fights. There was like 10-second knockouts, and there was like flash submissions and real wars. It was just a phenomenal night. And I went away thinking, man, I've dumped $50 so often to sit back and watch a UFC that I may be paying attention to. I might be paying more of attention to my nachos and my lukewarm beer. But if you go out to a local MMA show and you see these guys who are up-and-comers, perhaps stepping in the cage for the first time, and Lord knows those guys have a special place in my heart, it's just a completely different emotional experience. And I hadn't really done that and experienced that before. But as soon as I got that in my head that, hey, I can go out to regional MMA and I can have a better time than watching these supposed best guys in the world on pay-per-view, I'm like, I need to promote this in some way. I need to let the world know that they should be taking their $30, their $40 if they're gonna spend it on MMA, and they need to find a regional promotion, and they need to go and support those young athletes by watching them, and you're gonna have a better time as a fan.
I can't disagree with that, Boyd. You know, I get to as many events as I can. You know, I've traveled 16 hours to get to an event. Well, I was covering, obviously, for the company, but there's the excitement, that smell, that lady sitting next to you who screams oddly, you know, I mean, all that plays into a great experience. And I'll tell you, one of my all-time favorite shows, most people would probably leave mad, but I was working a show, and this lady kept yelling at me to get out of her way. And, you know, I'm doing photography on the cage side. And there's no barrier at this event, so it's just like 5 feet between me and the first row of chairs. This, I'm talking 400-pound, 5'5" lady stands up, flannel shirt and all. She's like, move. And I said, ma'am, I'm doing my job. And she goes, F your job, and threw a beer in my face. And I was like,
there's passion
okay.
for you, right?
You know, that's exactly how I thought. I said, okay. She's super excited. I found out later that was her nephew in a title fight, you know. I mean, you don't get that experience watching it on TV. You don't get that smell and that electricity in the air. You know, it's like when a guy walks to the cage, it's one of my favorite times of an event, because you see so much about his body movement, about his behavior. Is he nervous? Is he comfortable? You know, you see those guys jumping up and down, dancing, you know, the corner guys trying to put Vaseline on him, but he won't sit still. And then you see those other guys come out and their hands are a little shaky and they're a little pale. I love that. That's part of the experience.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm almost the opposite. I like after the fight. I like after the throwdown when you see these athletes who know each other, because it's a regional promotion. It's a pretty small pool of fighters. You might be talking 100 or so fighters for the whole region. So after the fight, you see these guys who've just gone out there and gone to war, and there's been so much animosity in them, and there's been so much emotion building up, and they've had such a violent confrontation in the cage, and you see them walking down the hallway to their locker rooms afterwards, sometimes holding each other up, high-fiving, hanging out with the opposing team members. It's something that people don't get to see when you only experience MMA through sort of a glossy, televised product. I know the most crazy fight from that card that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago was Conor McCoolin and Patrick Murphy, who just had like an insane slobber knocker of a violent fight. And when it was over, they were both kind of rocked and out of it because they'd both taken some heavy shots. But I heard that the next day, Michael showed up at Connor's gym. They hung out. They played video games. They just kind of got to know each other as people. That's the part of this sport that I absolutely love. I mean, Lord knows I'm a big softie. But there's something about that makes the sport so much more palatable to me, that it's not about a bunch of bullshit posturing and bravado. It's people in there trying to be pro athletes in the purest sense. It's not about the money. Lord knows there isn't a ton of money in regional MMA. It's all about the sport and the martial arts code and sort of a brotherhood of guys who are willing to step in there and do that for other people's entertainment and for their own satisfaction.
It's funny, you know, we both of us have, especially you now more and more to come, we get to talk to fighters a lot, and you going through the show and being a cube, you really got to see that maybe hidden side of the sport where these guys become family. It's, you know, it's no longer, you know, the Eagles versus, you know, the Warthogs. It's no longer the West Side versus the East Side. You know, it's not like high school football. It's not like baseball or hockey. You guys come together, you guys cross train, you guys bring in other coaches, and you guys build these bonds. And that's what I love about the sport, is you can go ahead and you can step into the cage, and you can fight, and the next week you guys can train together.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I know on the show, my training partner and extremely good friend, Steve Goodfellow, fought Josh Walker, a guy that I'd never even heard of before the show. We did some research, and then everything in our lives for a few weeks there was focusing towards Steve fighting this guy, Steve beating the hell out of this guy in some way, shape, or form. And Josh is now training at Titans with Steve when Steve gets in to train, and he's become like a wholehearted part of the Titans team. He still trains back at his other gym at Abaya, and he trains at Bashutakai and a couple of the other gyms around, because that's sort of the pattern for his training that he'd established. But he's right in there with Peter and Gavin Tucker and those guys, just bettering himself as an athlete. And I mean, that's just awesome. It's not going to work for every single athlete, and you have some gyms that have a more acrimonious relationship, and that's good for the sport too. I mean, everybody can't be wonderful lovey-dovey friends. You need to have a certain level of confrontation and animosity if you want to see really, really good fighting. I mean, we're not getting in there and playing checkers. They're getting in there to fight. So at some level, I mean, you need to have some animosity, but it doesn't carry over outside of the training and the fighting. When you see these guys hanging out, whether it's at the at the weigh-ins even, and certainly after at after parties and out in public, you can tell that there's a band of brotherhood there that they feel for sure. And that was something that I was unaware of before I started training.
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of brotherhood, we've got your brother of the show, not only the Cube, but also of the BS show. We've got Mr. Rick live with us.
Hey,
Hello.
Trash Canyon, Rick Doyle, how are we doing?
Hey, what's going on there, old boy?
Oh, it's going well, it's going well. Just so people know, Rick Doyle was on the Cubicle to the Cage television show with me. I tried to get him kicked off the show on a number of occasions. I took about 4 months of trying to figure out if I could poison him or somehow convince the producers that he was a flight risk or a felon. And he managed to stick around long enough that, like a staph infection, he grew on me. And I haven't been able to get rid of him since.
Listen to you. You can't get rid of me that easy, buddy. Somebody said I'm like an old horse. You take me out behind the barn and shoot me, but you better have 2 bullets because I'm not sure one would do the job right.
Yeah, that's right.
Happy St. Paddy's Day to you anyway. Like a good Irish boy, I'm sitting in the pub right now. We're down at Riley's. Everybody say hi to MFA Mouse.
Woo,
So
I was gonna introduce Rick. I thought I'd have to tell a story about him, but I think that right there will give everybody the perfect snapshot of who Rick Doyle is.
Hey, congratulations on your show, Boyd. Honestly, I mean, I hope everybody gives you your big 15 minutes of fame. You're really good at that stuff, you know. You're I don't like to admit it, but you're pretty bright and insightful. So. And you do have a face for radio as well, so this works so well.
Well, I was going to say, I was super glad that you agreed to come on and to help me out with the show, because it's like when they set up the crappy TV next to the kind of good TV at the store, so you think that the kind of good TV is better. I'm thinking, if I bring Rick on, he's going to make me sound like a freaking genius, so super glad to have you here pumping me up.
do I owe you fat beer there?
Yep. What's that?
That?
No, sorry,
I appreciate it.
On a serious note, I did ask Rick on, and he's going to be joining me most weeks, I'm sure, because he does have a slightly different perspective. Rick, before he started Cubicle to the Cage, for how many years, Rick, did you wrestle, and where did you travel?
Well, I was a pro wrestler for... I guess about 12 years, and when I say pro wrestler, our version, I guess, of pro wrestler is very different than other parts of the world. I always maintained a job, so although it was, you go to some countries, like I went over to England, and they ask you how long you've been a professional there. What they mean is how long have you actually, this is all you've done, this is how you make your living. So I was always a part-time guy, which most people in North America are. You know, like a weekend warrior or 4 or 5 day tours, but I guess about 12 years in total.
Wow. So
it was
Rick.
Good run. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and so Rick came into Cubicle to the Cage and started training for mixed martial arts with a very different set of knowledge and set of skills than the rest of us had. And the first way we realized that was he was really, really able to push himself and take a beating. Because he'd been through that sort of physical grinder through the pro wrestling world, and those of us who were had driven desks for the past decade just weren't used to that. So it was good to have Rick there, who'd sometimes give us advice and go, "Listen, man, you look like a piece of shit. You need to take a few days off, or you're not going to survive." I don't know how many times he told me that. Once in a while, I actually listened. I think once in a while, I actually listened and took some advice.
I couldn't get you to quit, though. I did try.
Yeah, you did try. Rick was famous for texting me at 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning with texts like, "Please quit," or I can't watch this anymore, you should quit, or
well,
my
honestly,
favorite,
you, were the
you
most,
suck.
Yeah, well, you did, man. Like, you were the most unlikely person in the world to do that. And to see where you went from to where you ended up, it was really inspiring. It was. I'm sitting here right beside a buddy of mine, Marcel. Marcel, you watched the entire series, man. And you want to do it.
After we see the episode where the appears that he popped into Knuckles and the guy's kneecap was dislocated, I
want to
do it to the same.
You got to get rid of that gut, man. That's horrible.
Oh,
but, I mean, Marcel here, the guy I'm sitting talking to, I mean, this guy was an ex-Marine. And, I mean, he watched that show and said, you know what, I think I can do, I need to be pushed like that. So when I hear shit like that, it makes me feel really good because I think there's a lot of other people out there that have something to prove.
Yeah, Rick, and I there's something else that I want to sort of uncover over the weeks and months that are coming when we cover mixed martial arts for people who perhaps don't know as much about it as they would like. Is my story is not that atypical. I mean, if you walk into your average MMA gym, and Rick, I know you talked about this as well. It's not a bunch of meathead killers who you'd see standing up in a police lineup. I mean, there's kids in there who you think they should be doing your taxes or serving you ice cream at an ice cream parlor, but then you flip the switch and throw them on the mat, and they're just stone-cold killers, right?
Yeah, the only exception to that would be Steve Goodfellow, obviously. He looks like a nerd, and he is a nerd, so that's probably the only exception to that rule. But, yeah, absolutely. I think what I realize is that the sport has evolved from the days of the tough guy that walks out of the bar and can swing and knock somebody out. I mean, those days are gone, and you're seeing very highly skilled athletes that are very meticulous about their trade and their sport, and they're 100% athletes. So, yeah, I think it's evolved to that point. That's what you're seeing. And when you get that, you're getting very level-headed individuals as well.
Yeah, and that's 100% right. I mean, I was quite surprised. I once told a story that when I got the idea that and I think I was about 39 at the time, when I wanted to try mixed martial arts, I actually drove up to a local mixed martial arts gym. I got out of my car. I actually made it up to putting my hand on the doorknob, and I didn't go in. I just went back to my car, and I drove away because I had this vision in my mind that in there were these just insane savages who I wasn't going to be able to connect with and I was going to be terrified of. And while I do respect the fighting skill of all of the fighters that I've gotten to know over the past couple of years, they're not scary people. They have scary skills, sure, but they're not scary people. They're just average guys who have a passion for one particular type of sport, and more than anything, they want to push themselves to and beyond their personal limits. I think that's the maybe not unique but common thing about all mixed martial artists that I've met.
And I think gyms have recognized that fact too. As you know, I've gone around to a few gyms now, and you go in and I start to see the family atmosphere, and you know, people will talk about the different qualities of gym as far as the type of athletes they put out. You know, I don't give a shit about any of that. I think if people are coming together and they're participating in this and they're helping each other and they're building that family, I think that's what's important. And it doesn't have to be MMA. It can be different parts of MMA, you know, that per individual finds and settles into and becomes comfortable with. I think that's the trick to it. Get these people in the gyms. Make them feel welcome. Because
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
The benefits to everybody. It benefits everybody. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I remember back to that moment when you and I, I'm going to name drop now shamelessly, but when you and I walked into Henzo Gracie's Academy in Manhattan, that was really the only, the first other gym that I'd been in other than Titans where I'd trained before, which was a boxing gym and an MMA gym and a jiu-jitsu gym, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. Well, I remember that day we walked into Henzo's, and like, it was like walking into a goddamn cathedral.
Yeah. And it didn't matter who you were, where you came from, what your background was. You were going to be treated with respect and dignity, and they appreciate the fact that you're coming there to learn something. So yeah, I really dug that. That changed everything for me too, to be honest.
Cool. Well, I'm hoping you can hang on the line for a bit, Rick.
I'm not going anywhere, buddy. It's St. Boondock Saint Day, right? The best movie ever made, by the way.
Like, oh, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get to Skippy to put you on hold. You can go back and perhaps have another pint of green beer. I'm going to chat with Peter Martel.
Oh, shit, I wanted to talk to Pete, too.
Well, we're going to bring you back on. We're going to bring you back on because I want people to know that a regular segment that Rick's going to do every week is Trash Talk. Trash Canyon was Rick's wrestling name, and that's a moniker that he continues to carry today because it's probably so apt to his personality. But, yeah, he's going to do a segment called Trash Talk. Rick's got some counterintuitive ideas about fighting, life, philosophy, and I just love how he expands my mind by challenging my perception of who I am and what I should be doing with my life. So, yeah, we're gonna have fun exploring a few things every week.
So, boys, just a sec before you put me on hold.
Yeah,
are
sure.
Are you talking to Peter or am I talking to Peter too?
I'm talking to Peter, and then we're going to bring you back on, and all three of us will have a chat.
Yeah, because I have some. I like to ask him about this card coming up.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay. Cool. So you put me
on.
Sounds
good, brother. We'll bring Pete on in a couple of minutes, and then we'll get you back online.
I got him. I got Rick's muted, and Peter's ready for you, brother.
Okay. Well, I better give Pete a little introduction. Peter Martel, I met about 4 or 5 years ago when I got the perhaps ill-advised and crazy idea to become a mixed martial artist. And I quickly found out that Peter was not only a trainer and a coach, but also a promoter of mixed martial arts in Atlantic Canada. And with, as you're going to find out a little bit later in the program with an interview with Amy Pitt from New Brunswick, Peter is probably the only active promoter of MMA in Atlantic Canada right now with his Extreme Cage Combat promotion. How are we doing, Pete?
Doing good, doing good.
Good. You pushing your guys good and hard tonight?
Yeah, I was actually. It's working on a couple of specialized things with one of the guys. He's got a couple of holes in his game we're trying to
film. Cool. Yeah, so Peter is the head MMA instructor and owner of Titans Fitness Academy in Halifax, Nova Scotia. But, Pete, I'm sure I'm going to have you on frequently to talk about all aspects of MMA, but for tonight, I really want to focus on your experience, not as a coach and as a trainer, but as a promoter. Because I think that's a part of mixed martial arts that very, very few people are aware of other than seeing Dana White standing up at a press conference, perhaps berating or swearing at a fighter who's not quite doing what he wants. I want people to understand what it takes to
I don't
promote.
Understand that about Dana. He's got all this money and he's unhappy. He's yelling at fighters. I don't get it. I'd be hugging all the fighters.
You know what they say, Pete? They say money can't buy happiness, and he is a perfect example or proof of that.
Oh, boy, jeez. I think if I had his money, I'd try to cuddle every fighter I saw.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue. Let's get in our time machine and go back. What made you want to promote mixed martial arts yourself? What was it, 2005, 2006?
Well, when I first started, it was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 2004. I was training and, basically there was nothing like that around here. So to get training partners, I would do challenge matches. And, they were fun. So I thought, wow, I wonder if we could... If we could do one of these fight cards in Halifax, because the
so what would you do? You would just as a fighter yourself or as a martial artist yourself, you would just go into like what? Like was it smokers or was it just going into other gyms or?
I started. I had a place where I trained. And I would invite anybody who wanted to come over to fight to a no rules fight. So we had all kinds of people that would show up. Sometimes they'd be other martial artists. Sometimes they'd be hockey brawlers or Sometimes there were weightlifters and skateboarders, you name it. All kinds of weird people showed up. Some really cool people showed up. Some interesting people showed up, and that was you know, that gave me the idea. You know, wait a second, the Ultimate Fighting Championship is, you know, I love it. Why can't I do one here?
And there would have been some major regulatory roadblocks for you doing that, would there not?
Oh boy. the Boxing Authority, which regulated combat sports here, basically, they were terrified of it. So they just basically kept throwing, you know, obstacles, you know, tasks for me to complete. And, you know, they'd say, get this done, and, you know, we'll hold a fight, and I'd get that done. And then say, oh, no, you have to do this now, and I'd go get that done. And this is over a period of months, you know. Have to go get this done now, so I'd go get that done. Like, eventually, after, you know, more than a year and a half, I completed the last of the, you know, I was like, okay, you said, you know, I want to go on sale now with tickets. They're like, no, you're never going to be able to hold an MMA fight. that was, you know, I was like, you guys had me run around for a year and a half just to tell me that, no, it's never going to happen.
And that wasn't enough to make you quit?
Well... You know, it was very frustrating. I mean, I did demonstration matches with them, and I could tell they had no idea about any submissions. They had no idea about kicking or clinch or anything. You know, they used to say, you know, what happens if you spar with this particular person? And this particular person, actually, it was Ralph Hollett. The guy said, what happens if Ralph Hollett were to hit you? And Ralph, you know, Ralph was quite a good boxer. He was the Canadian boxing champion. He was Commonwealth boxing champion. He was, you know, kickboxing champion. He could hit. But he also trained with me, and I sparred with him on a regular basis. So that's what I said to him. I said, I spar with Ralph all the time. You know, they just didn't know anything about mixed martial arts, and it was not – they had no intention of legalizing it.
So how did you go about turning the tide or changing their mind?
Well, I mean, I kept poking and prodding, and really there wasn't going to be any changing of their mind. Like, there was an entrenched structure that did not want that sport here. Boxing and amateur boxing was controlled by an old guard, and they really, you know, had a firm grasp on the power structure, and there was very little chance of it ever getting passed. But luckily, there was a change in leadership at the Boxing Authority. And the new chairman, who's still the chairman of the Boxing Authority now, Mickey McDonald, came on board. And Mickey was a little more enlightened. And Mickey went about, the process of getting mixed martial arts legalized. And, you know, he contacted me, and we collaborated and spent a lot of time training judges and officials and going over rules. And, you know, we did challenge matches and we did demonstration matches. And eventually we got to the point where we were able to hold our first fight.
Wow. And how long would you say it was from when you first approached the commission that first time to when you held that first event in 2006?
It had to be close to 2 years.
That's a long time to be.
So, 2 years.
So I'm guessing you held that first event, and you made a enormous amount of money, became wildly successful and rich, and that's how you've been able to promote MMA since.
Yeah. No. It wasn't quite, you know, the happily ever after story. About 12 days before the show, I had a friend of mine on city council call me and tell me that the city council was trying to shut our event down. After we had got it legalized provincially, they were against mixed martial arts, and they tried to have it outlawed via city council in any city building. And we had been planning and selling tickets to hold the event in a city building. And I kind of did a straw poll of the councilors and found out that it was about 50-50. So,
wow. So the province of Nova Scotia... So the province of Nova Scotia was on board, but the city of Halifax was going to block it. Is that correct?
That's right. Basically, if I wasn't going to be able to hold it in a city building, there aren't very many other choices as to where to hold it. So luckily, my friend, City Councilor Don Sloan, was able to get me, through a special request of the mayor, I was allowed to speak before City Council. Normally, and there's a little trick to this, the councilors who brought this up did it, 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks out, because normally to get for an application to speak before council takes 2 weeks. So by waiting past the 2 weeks, I wouldn't have been allowed to speak to defend my position. But she was able to get special permission from the mayor for me to be able to speak and defend my position. And really, I mean, they didn't have any idea what they were fighting against. None of them knew anything about the sport. And, the guy who wanted it, there was a counselor, too, who wanted it banned, his big thing was, we're doing this in front of the children. This is horrible for the children. Children shouldn't see this. And I just so happened that WWE Raw had been in the Metro Center, I think, a week or two before. And I was
nice
there.
Nice timing. Very nice timing.
You're going to let, Raw, these wrestlers, there was a 300-pound man who slapped one of the female managers in the face, spit on her, and dragged her across the ring by the hair of the head. And the Metro Center was full of children. And I was saying, this is fine, but these professional athletes who want to fight mixed martial arts is bad for the children. And, I explained what was involved in the sport, and by the time the vote was taken, we won, actually, 19-2. So,
wow.
We were allowed to proceed.
You see, I'm only used to you being able to convince people to do things by, like, arm-barring them or choking them. I didn't realize you could stand in front of council and just with your words convince people to do what you want. That's very impressive.
Well, luckily, I was going to fall back on the arm bars if I had to, but
nobody that I know would mess with Don Sloan. So I think you had a good team going in there to get that done.
Absolutely.
Okay, so,
I mean, when we did have the fight go off, it was huge. First fight in Nova Scotia, we were on the front page of the papers. We were leading off all the newscasts. We even made national news. Not all of it was positive. There were some diehard sports reporters who were, we like hockey. We like boxing. This stuff is no good. And I remember one reporter, I probably shouldn't mention his name because I'm going to, and not that I care about mentioning his name, but, I want to mention his name, but I probably won't. we held a press conference, and he looked like he was homeless, like he'd been living in a dumpster. And he's a respected reporter. He reports for, the newspapers, and he's on TV and that. And I was fielding questions, and Mickey McDonald, the chair, was sitting beside me, and he said to me, Peter, isn't it true that when the fighters are broken and bloody and they're tangled in the barbed wire, isn't that when the violence really begins? And I mean, over to Mickey, and I was like, is he joking? I thought he was joking, but he was serious. And that's what he knew about mixed martial arts.
He thought there was barbed wire.
Yeah, he thought that we could tangle people with barbed wire and then beat them up.
It reminds me of the...
I do think that this sometimes does happen in wrestling.
True. Right. Yeah. The waters were quite muddy in his mind. It reminds me of the rumor I heard one time that there was actually talk about crocodiles in the first UFC at one point.
Oh, wow. That would have been...
I think Horry and Gracie...
So. It's doable. I mean, I don't know if crocodiles would sell tickets, but
you got that first card, and I was doing a bit of research just the other day when I was thinking about having you on, and I wanted to talk more about promotion than about coaching or actually fighting, and I started looking over that first card, and I mean you wouldn't have known it at the time. But you were set up for success. I mean, you had Jason McDonald, Gideon Ray, Roger Hollett, T.J. Grant. I mean, this was on one card in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I wouldn't want to have to bankroll that card today in Halifax.
No, and to be perfectly honest, putting that first card on, we didn't really know what we were doing. We paid the fighters too much, spent too much money on a cage. Didn't charge the tickets, so gave away more tickets than you can shake a stick at. Because we had no idea it would sell out, so we were giving away tickets hand over fist. Hey, come see the show. We just wanted to put people in the venue.
Sure.
We probably could have sold at the Metro Center.
Right. Well, tell me about that. Tell me about that first night, because I'm dying to find out, like, what was going through your mind that night going in there when you were going to put on that first card. And because the audience wouldn't have known what to expect either, right? Because I'm sure most people in the audience had never, ever seen mixed martial arts before.
Absolutely. Most of them had never seen it. Some of them had never seen it on TV. This was a, you know, the UFC wasn't on every other week. You know, I think it was on once every 3 months or so. So, I mean, it was barely, and I say barely, controlled chaos. I think I had 10 of my fighters fighting, or maybe 8 of my fighters fighting. So in the midst of, you know, cornering them and trying to find people's seats and trying to deal, put up little fires, and it was, you know, I think the entire night was a full sprint. The night seemed to last about 5 minutes. But
yeah.
In reality, it was about 4 hours.
I can imagine that. Do you remember anything about the fights? Did you even get a chance to see them and appreciate them? Because, like I said, you had people like Jason McDonald, Roger Hollett, TJ Grant on the card. Do you remember coming away with any sense of how the card went off from a fighter's perspective?
Well, I think the fights went very well. There were some knockouts, there were some submissions. I remember I watched the Jason McDonald fight because I didn't have to corner either of them. And I remember that was a great fight, went to a decision that Jason McDonald won. He got cut on a spinning back fist that he closed the distance on. I think he ate an elbow over the eye, got cut on it. So, you know, he was bleeding pretty good, and I remember how happy he was sitting on top of the cage with his arms raised, blood running down his face. You know, and they put on a great show. It was certainly, you know, a great experience, a lot of fun, a lot of stress, a lot of pressure.
It wasn't enough to drive you away because you're coming up on number 20 in just a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I don't know. The more I talk about that, the more I feel like jumping off a bridge sometimes.
Listen, I've been hanging around with you enough to know that you only go through that for a couple of weeks right around the card. About 2 or 3 days after the card, when you've had some sleep and some time with your kids, you'll be ready for number 21. But I do want to ask you one more question about that first card, and that's sort of one of the statesmen of Canadian MMA right now, a guy that I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about, was TJ Grant. And would back then even could you predict that he was somebody who really had the potential to go where he's gone? Or was he just another guy getting in there to fight?
Well, you know, TJ Grant grew up in Dartmouth, and when my club was in Dartmouth, they used to train with me before I moved to Halifax. TJ was young, I think 18 years old, didn't have a car, had to stay in Dartmouth, and ended up training at another gym. And I knew TJ's older brother, Randy. I trained with him, and Randy was a great boxer. And TJ trained in boxing, he trained in jiu-jitsu, trained in wrestling. And he was dedicated, driven, and just a real nice guy, you know, a good kid. And, you know, certainly I knew that he, you know, could go places, but you can never tell, I mean, at that age, if they're going to go to the UFC or not. I mean, who knows, maybe he turns 19, discovers the bars and women, and gets drunk every weekend for the rest of his life. But thankfully that didn't happen, because we'd be missing out on a great fighter, a great talent.
And a great ambassador.
The nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, and a great ambassador for the sport as well. I know one of the guys that trains at Titan, Sebastian, says I think he only met him one time a couple of years ago, and then just recently he ran into him, and he looked at him, kind of closed his eyes for a second, and said, "You're Sebastian, right?" And he's like, "Man, I can't believe this guy, like, remembers my name. We had, like, a five-minute conversation 2 years ago." And I'm much like yourself. I have trouble remembering the name of the guy that I'm grappling with if I ask him 5 times.
I don't know. No, I don't think anybody's memory is worse than mine. Maybe Gavin Tucker. She was pretty bad, too.
You guys are kindred spirits. I do want to ask you a little bit about the promotion, about ECC. Again, because people just don't understand sort of how this works or what it takes. When they see a local mixed martial arts card at a venue in their small regional city,
they have no inkling of what's going on in the background to make that take place. Does ECC have staff, or are the people that work for you part-time, or do you just sort of pay people on contract when you need them? Because, I mean, it takes so much to get this done, whether it's setting up the venue, building the cage, promoting, posters, signs, all of that, matchmaking, all of that work that's going on. How do you accomplish that besides not sleeping yourself?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the amount of sleep you get is inversely proportional to the amount that needs to be done. I think that I've been fortunate to have some great staff, including guys like, you know, Joel McDougall and Wade Graves, and, you know, the last few ECCs, Gavin Tucker has been indispensable. Chelsea Taylor, my wife, for putting up with me for doing all this stuff. You know, and there's staff that come and go as their schedules allow and their schoolwork allows and their lives, you know, their wives and kids allow. So we've been fortunate enough to kind of put together different teams for different events.
Yeah, it's certainly no small venture to pull these things off every few months.
Absolutely not. I mean, it begins picking a name, start matchmaking the card, start getting medicals. That alone, just getting guys to agree to fight each other and getting them to sign contracts and getting the medicals done to turn anybody's hair gray.
Yeah, well, that's a good segue into something else that I wanted to talk about. We're going to be pushing and promoting this show a lot in the area in Atlantic Canada. And there's probably going to be a lot of people hear this podcast who maybe have it in the back of their mind that they'd like to try MMA one of these days. And it would be exciting for them to know that you are, in part at least, responsible for amateur mixed martial arts now being regulated in Nova Scotia. Is that correct?
That is. It took a while, not as long as the pros, but probably a year more. To get amateur MMA legalized in Nova Scotia. We have a board, we have registered clubs, registered athletes, insurance, the whole bit. And now we have amateurs that compete, which is fantastic.
The four amateur fights on the card a couple of months ago were fantastic. I mean, there was very, very little for the average MMA fan to see different between what the amateurs were doing and what the pros were doing. A couple of guys like Akitoshi is one guy who comes to mind. I mean, he just looked like a seasoned pro in there. He wasn't shaken. He was composed. He fought a fantastic fight. Quite shocking to see that from an 0-0 amateur fighter. It just shows the evolution of the sport. And is that something that's surprised you or taken you aback, did you see that coming?
It was very, very pleasant to see. It just means people are training and training and training. And a lot of guys are hesitant to jump into the pro ranks. So when we said, hey, we've got amateurs, they were like, hey, you know, that's fine. I'd love to fight amateur. And that way they can see where they're at, what they have to work on, and they can find out if this sport's for them. I mean, the guy that Akitoshi fought, I mean, watching from the official's table, I think Akitoshi landed a 2 or 3 punch combo followed up by a head kick, and he did that a couple minutes later again, a 2 or 3 punch combo followed up by a head kick, and Joe Brooks, the guy he was fighting, just shrugged it off, and I was just thinking, oh my goodness, these guys are coming up, you know, these guys are going to be fighting pro in a year or two, which will be, you know, hopefully the fans will get to know these guys, get to know what their skills are, and say, gee, I can't wait till they fight pro.
I remember that fight. I mean, Joe Brooks got a head like a cement brick. There's absolutely no doubt. And he wasn't quitting. There was absolutely no quit. If I'm not mistaken, was that fight eventually stopped on the feet, or did he actually go down?
I don't remember. That was a busy night. I can't remember exactly. I know that Akitoshi won that fight, and I don't know if it was due to a stoppage. It may have been a technical technical knockout.
Yeah, it was whatever the case. I mean, I remember sitting there watching that night and just thinking that if this is what amateur mixed martial arts looks like, then it's going to be the salvation of regional MMA for this area anyway. Because like you said, guys are hesitant to jump in. It was a TKO punches round two. I don't think Joe Brooks went down. I kind of think that was it was a really good stoppage against the cage, if I remember correctly. That kid was tough as nails.
He was.
But
I mean, it was certainly a one-sided fight, but throwing heavy and he was dangerous. And I remember he caught Akitoshi with a big shot that wobbled him. It was. That's the thing, when you've got someone who hits hard like that, the tide can turn at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. As I talked about before you came on the call, even it was the case with the Conor McCoolan Mike Murphy fight, which was a pro fight on the card, where Mike was just landing an enormous volume of shots, but Conor was just eating all of them and just like throwing haymakers from his ass pocket, and he connected once, and I thought Mike was completely unconscious and like woke up when his head hit the floor. I mean, that was a hell of a fight. That was probably my favorite fight of the night.
I cornered that fight with my jaw hanging open, I think, the whole fight.
yeah. There were two gentlemen sitting next to me that night who hadn't been to a live MMA card before, and one of them just kept saying over and over, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!"
I think I've been seeing that too.
I think he's going to be back. I think that guy is coming back.
I'm glad to hear it. Hey, it's funny. We had worked on we'd refreshed an armbar attack from Psy Control with Mike a few weeks before the fight, and he was doing well. Clearly, winning the fight, winning the exchanges, and then Conor McCullen throws like a haymaker from hell out of nowhere and catches Mike right on the button and drops the flash knockout. When Mike's head hits the ground, he wakes up as Conor McCullen's jumping on him, and Mike immediately throws up that side control armbar and almost gets him with it, and he has to pull out, and the way he pulls out allows Mike to get back to his feet, and right away he goes back to slugging. It was just, you know, I think I was talking to someone tonight who was telling me about that. And he said he was standing with his back to the wall, and when that happened, he said he couldn't see the rest of the fight because nobody sat down until the end of the fight.
That's correct, yeah. It was the entire crowd stood for probably the last 90 seconds of that fight. The world needs to see that, man. We need to get that out there on the interwebs or on television. Mike and Conor both deserve for the world to see that fight. And it was funny because I saw some photos on Facebook a couple days later of Mike at Conor's gym, sitting there just like chatting with him, and they were obviously hanging out and bonding over it. It was pretty awesome to see.
Well, that's one of the things I'm trying to work toward. We don't want animosity between gyms. We want all the gyms to get along. I want to be able to work with all the local gyms. I mean, there are some great gyms here. There's some great people that go to them. And, you know, the people that train there aren't anybody's enemy. They're just people who enjoy the same sport the same as anybody else at any other club. And that's what we want to, you know, get across. These guys are going to compete. They're going to, you know, fight each other. But afterward, they're friends. You know, they'll have a beer together. You know, they'll chat. Getting back to that fight, I believe Top MMA News called it the fight of the year. And they qualified.
Oh, wow.
And they said, we know it's only January, but we don't think anything's going to top this. So that's something. They're calling a fight of January the fight of the year.
If they change their tune, if they say something else beats that fight, then I'm going to go through hell or high water to make sure that I get to see that other fight. Because I couldn't disagree with Derek on that one. What you just said about there doesn't need to be animosity between gyms and between fighters, and we're all kind of in the same sport here, trying to get to the same places, is 100% why I'm doing this show. When Skippy and Carl and Lepaki approached me and gave me this opportunity to host this show, I was so excited because it's a way that I felt that I could give back a little bit to mixed martial arts. You know that I had a 3-4 year journey through mixed martial arts. I consider myself a MMA tourist, I took a small foray into the mixed martial arts world and was fortunate enough to get in the cage and see what that was all about. And I just want to give back because it was such an enriching experience for me. And I said one time before in an interview actually with the Top MMA News, a high tide floats all boats. And if we can raise people's awareness about mixed martial arts, mixed martial artists, coaches, gyms, promoters, all of us that it takes to make mixed martial arts happen in this region, if we can get people to understand that, then we can grow the sport, and we can have better supported athletes and better supported gyms and ultimately better MMA and see some of our athletes go on to bigger and brighter stages eventually.
Absolutely. When you look at what Halifax has done, considering how small we are, the fact that we've had, you know, the number of athletes that we have that have trained here that have gone to the big show, the UFC, you know, that's pretty impressive. It's just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many good guys coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I listed a few minutes ago all the people you had on that first card that are known names in Canadian and international MMA. I scrolled through another couple of cards, and I saw a card that was TJ Grant, Ryan Ford, Alexis Davis, Lou Pauly. I was like, this is really, really impressive for a small regional promotion in a tiny Canadian town.
Unfortunately... I think I'm a better mixed martial arts fan than a businessman. Having all those people in the shows.
Yeah, well, like you said, you got up and comers coming now. We have an awful lot, actually, of successful mixed martial artists that are building impressive records. Guys in your gym like Gavin Tucker and Mike Malott and Pat Carroll and. In Fit Plus, they have Chris Kalides. I think he's undefeated right now. Ryan Connor, who's headlining your upcoming card, I think has only ever lost one.
6-0, yeah.
Yeah, and then we've got so many other gyms. I mean, Abaya is pumping out tons of guys now. Clinch is putting up a few guys every now and then. And then, and we're gonna hear about this from Amy Pitt in the next segment, but no MMA anywhere else in Atlantic Canada right now, which must be a boon for you.
It makes it a little bit easier to get fighters that we're not competing with other shows, to get them because, I mean, there has been a kind of a, you know, it's been difficult to get fighters, you know, when you have other provinces whose regulations aren't quite as strict as yours, it's less work for the fighter to go there and fight. The regulations in Nova Scotia are very strict. I would say probably close to being on par with Ontario, and Lord knows people in Ontario complain about their commission.
Yeah. We're going to do a whole show. We're going to do a whole show on that a little bit down the road in a few weeks where I'm hoping to talk to some referees, some judges, some commissioners, perhaps even a doctor to really get a handle on sort of the regulations and how they evolved and just to make sure people are aware and what they have to do because I know from working with you before that you get fighters who you think are medicaled and then find out at the last minute that they're actually not because they really don't appreciate how stringent the regulations are here in Nova Scotia.
We've had guys who fought in the United States, they fought in New Brunswick, and they can't fight here because they have diabetes, and that's because our commission is very conservative. They're very guarded, and they don't want to take any risks. We had a guy who had, beaten cancer, and he had fought in New Brunswick, but for him to be allowed to fight here, they wanted a letter from his oncologist. Now, an oncologist is a cancer doctor that's very specialized, and they're treating people who are fighting for their lives. They're treating people who are often dying. They sure as hell are not going to take time off their schedule to tell some guy, I'll come and see me, I'll write you a letter saying you're okay to fight. Their schedules are busy. They're booked for months.
Sure.
So when you tell the fighter, you got to get a letter from your oncologist, you may as well be telling him you're never going to fight because that's, not the easiest thing in the world to get. You get things where suddenly, they've a little blip in the guy's, condition called athlete's heart. Well, now you've got to go see a cardiologist and get a test on your heart's things like this. These things, you know, if you book them, they are months and months and months down the road. And I'm not faulting them. I'm not saying that that's wrong. Certainly we want to make sure the athletes are protected, saying that it is difficult. It's taxing and trying, and it's a struggle. And certainly I wouldn't want the commission to say, hey, no, there's a hard fight anyway. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that the journey to get athletes licensed so that they can fight is not easy.
Yeah, absolutely. So with amateur fighting now available on your cards, and I think you have, is it about an even split on the upcoming card, or maybe even one more AMI than pro is what you're looking at?
About 60-40, I think.
About 60-40. And like I said, I was about to say earlier, I really think that amateur mixed martial arts is the savior of martial arts promotion in this region. Because it's a way for people to segue into the sport from traditional martial arts or from just training a little bit of martial arts for a year or two and not feeling they're quite ready for that jump into pro, especially when the level of pros can be so high, even for a 1-0 or 0-0 fighter these days, like we saw with Akitoshi. It's going to be a way for people to get their feet wet without having to make that full leap. And I'm hoping to have yourself and some other people on another show down the road to talk about the difference between professional and amateur MMA, the rules, the small differences, and those types of things. That's not for tonight, but I do want to investigate that down the road. But just put out to the trainers and coaches and fighters in Atlantic Canada right now, if somebody wants to fight on an ECC card, how can they make that happen? If some kid's been training his ass off in St. John's, Newfoundland, or Prince Edward Island, and they want to get on a ECC card sometime in the next year or so, how do they do that?
The easiest would be to email me at pmartel, with two L's, at extremecagecombat.ca, or message me through the Titans Facebook page, or message me through the Extreme Cage Combat Facebook page. You know, give me a phone call. You didn't have to find my number. Just contact me, reach out, and we're.
And do you want to hear from fighters? Do you want to hear from fighters, or do you want to hear from their coaches?
You know what? Sometimes we hear from both. Some fighters, some amateur fighters, don't necessarily have an MMA coach. Maybe they've been training, you know, boxing. Maybe they've been training wrestling, but and you know, the amateur MMA will put it together, but they don't necessarily have a coach. So sometimes it's just the amateur athletes that will contact you. It's a lot better if they do have a coach. We certainly would prefer to deal with their coaches. Because one thing to ask your coach is, hey, you know, is this guy ready?
Right.
I've heard of guys who've gone into amateur fights in other provinces, and I say, oh, where do you train at? And they're like, oh, I'm a street fighter. That's the kind of thing we're trying to avoid. You know?
Yeah. Okay, so I am going to break down the card, if not next week, the week following. I'll probably get Gavin Tucker. Did Gavin do most of the matchmaking for this card?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Card, as far as matching it up and getting contracts and medicals together for me. You know, we discuss who we can get and bounce ideas off each other a little bit, but 99% of the work, the load's been on him putting that together.
Well, I'm definitely going to have Gavin on. We'll break down. I might see if I can get somebody who's a lot more knowledgeable about mixed martial arts in this region than I am, maybe one of the top MMA news guys, to come on and help me break down that card, because you got some awesome, awesome pro fights there. See if we can't maybe dig up a little bit of info on some of these 0-0 and 1-0 amateurs as well. But we do have... good friend of yours, Mr. Trash Canyon, on the line, and he says he wants to chat with you about the upcoming card as well. You there, Rick?
All right. Yeah, I'm here.
How's the bar looking?
Oh, well, I'm not in the bar. The coach is on there, right?
Coach is on there. Sorry, I meant is it relaxing at home this evening?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Like they made him just kick him out of the bar.
A wonderful evening at home, Professor Martel. How are you?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Boyd could only wish to shut me off as easily as he did right there most times, right? But I could hear everything you guys were saying. I definitely want to be on the show on the commission there. I'd like to put my 2 cents worth in on that as well.
Oh,
how's this card looking, Pete? How's this card looking?
It looks pretty good. You know, we had a very positive meeting with the commission last week, and we have another one tomorrow. So it's looking pretty good.
So your headline is Connor versus Whitlock?
Lyndon Whitlock, yeah.
He's a tough guy. Connor, obviously. I fought him. The guy's tough as nails. He's got a big head, too, man. He can take a punch. That guy's tough. But what's the deal on this Whitlock guy?
Well, if you remember, Whitlock fought Gavin Tucker and took Gavin to the third round before Gavin knocked him out. And he's gone down a weight class since then.
He hits
like a truck. He's got good jiu-jitsu. You know, if I had to pick a weakness on him, I would say maybe his conditioning. Connor's in for, you know, Connor better come ready because Whitlock, he brings it.
So Connor's coming in at 135 this time, I read?
He is. That's where he fights at.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. That guy was ripped at 145. Where did he lose it?
Well, he went up a weight class to fight you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Man, that's going to be wicked.
Yeah, these guys have this down to an absolute science. It's something else that we'll have to investigate in future shows. But how those guys do that and how they've tuned their bodies to be able to cut that weight when they look like skinned rabbits as is, and then to be able to cut an extra 10 pounds and drop a weight class is just amazing to me.
And so we got Anderson versus Cox. That's Maverick Cox. That guy is tough. Anderson, is he the guy that fought Sebastian?
He is.
He's a flying knee guy.
He's got some wild flying knees. You got to be careful of those.
Okay. And then we got Rhines versus what's that? Spinelli or Spielin?
Spielin.
That's the kid that trains at a Zombie Proof, right?
That's right. He's the guy
who
fought and submitted Mancini. Now, Mancini had knockout of the year last year on Top of the News. He's a really high-level wrestler. And he was so confident that he flew himself in for that fight against Spielin, and Spielin submitted him in the first round. So Spielin's got some top-notch jits going on there. And,
He had me to Facebook. I've been watching him. That kid's right into it, isn't he? Like, he lives and breathes this thing.
So many of these young guys coming up live and breathe it, and they've been training since they were young, and they're so good at an early age. You know, I think Morgan Rhines last fight, I think he broke some guys' orbital bones with some elbows. This is going to be a good fight.
And you got Malott versus what? NS? Is that his name?
I believe it's Ainsley Robertson. And Ainsley Robertson is a devastating wrestler, like a fantastic guy.
Oh, I heard about this guy. Is he the guy coming out of the States?
No, this guy's a Canadian. He was an alternate on the Canadian Olympic wrestling team.
So
this guy's, I mean... This guy's if this guy wants to go to the ground, it's probably going to go to the ground, I guess.
Well, that's what we want to see, right? Let's put up or shut up. Let's have a battle, and that's what Malott needs anyway. What about Walker? I see him on the poster. Who's he fighting?
Yeah, Josh Walker is. Well, his opponent's up in the air. We've got two guys lined up right now, and we're seeing which guy shakes. I don't want to throw names out there until these guys get their stuff in gear. One guy's fighting, he's medical and cleared. The guy wants to fight, but he's not medical and cleared. So it's a little bit of a toss-up. Walker's sitting there waiting, training, and he's gung-ho to fight whoever clears.
Yeah, he's a beast, and he's really upped his game lately. Like, in this last year, year and a half, I've seen him. Like, that guy is tough. So what about Yoho and who's McPhee?
McPhee is he's a solid guy. He's not fighting Yoho though.
He's not.
McPhee is fighting Mitch Minette out of Florida. McPhee, I believe, is from Justin Burrow's gym, and that's Cumberland MMA, I believe. They put out solid guys. I mean, Justin Bourgeois was ranked in the top 10, and is a fantastic fighter in his own right. And there's no wonder he's putting out good guys. Now, Mitch Renett used to train at Fit Plus for a long time. Now he's at Forza, and those guys certainly know how to, you know, produce fighters as well. So,
they're all coming. They're all coming now. And what about the guy that fought? Mike, the guy that trains over at 374. I went over there. I met him. I couldn't believe it. I watched this kid in the cage, and the guy's an animal. What a battle those two guys had, eh? And then I walk over there, and he said, yeah, this is the guy that fought Mike. And I was like, oh, my God, for real? Like, the guy was a beast in the cage. He's the nicest
kid ever.
That's
Connor McDoolin, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? So many times these guys that are in the cage fighting in the sport of MMA, they're nice people. They come from all walks of life, and you know, they're respectful. They're not bullies, and they're not meatheads. You're going to get bullies and meatheads in any sport, in any walk of life. But for the most part, you know, the people that I come across, I deal with in mixed martial arts are great people.
I thought my phone cut out there for a sec.
No,
sorry. I still got you.
So I was choking on my coffee.
Yeah, well, this looks great, though. This looks great, Coach. I mean, I'm excited about this, this whole thing. And then you've got some amateurs as well, eh?
Yeah, there's some great amateurs on the card. Some great guys coming up. And that's the good thing about this is when you try to convince someone to fight, go, oh man, you're training, you look great. Why don't you take a fight? And it used to have to be a pro fight. Everybody always thinks that they're fighting Chuck Liddell. You know, I'm not ready to fight. I'm not ready to fight. Now that we can tell them, hey, it's amateur, that pressure's off them. You know, they know Chuck Liddell's not an amateur. You know, and by the time they've been in the cage once or twice or three or four times, five times, then they can go pro if they want. You know, and, you know, I'd like to see guys have, you know, five or six amateur fights, and if they're successful, then turn pro. I mean, right now I've got guys calling me up trying to match them up. They're 4-0 pro. But they're 21-1 amateur. So basically they've got, you know, nearly 30 fights with one loss. Who the hell is going to fight them coming out of the Maritimes?
Exactly.
It's got two amateur fights or two or three pro fights, and you got to fight someone with 30 fights. You know, that number of amateur fights, you know, until we catch up years from now,
well,
you know, we're not going to be able to fight those guys.
I've said before, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. Get in and put on a good fight, man. It doesn't matter. If you're a fighter, get in there and fight.
Yeah, and I think that's
going to... I couldn't take this one this time because, you know, I got another thing on the go right now. But I'm not done. I'll be back. I want to be back in the summertime. I'm doing this arm wrestling thing right now. So I'm going to concentrate.
I heard you won a provincial championship.
Well, I didn't win it, but I qualified to go to the Nationals. So I want to really concentrate on that. It's a fun sport. There's a lot of technique to that I didn't realize. So I got my ass whooped pretty soundly, but I won enough. I'm good to go to the Nationals, so I'm gonna give that a good run. So
when are the Nationals, right?
That's old school, man. When you go to a party, everybody's got the hand up on the table. That's old school. That's where I come from. So I want to give her a good run anyway, see what happens.
I'm sure you're going to do well. You seem to land on your feet no matter what you do.
Well, you've got no choice, really. I kind of balance all I do.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
No problem.
Let's connect and get a segment for Trash Talk for the next show.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. And congratulations, Boyd. I think what you're doing is really going to up the visibility of the sport, especially in Eastern Canada. I mean, Professor Martel does a great job providing a stage for these guys that train so hard. So I think what you're doing is going to be a positive thing for the sport. I think it's going to put more asses in the seats, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day, because these guys work hard enough to deserve that. And so I really applaud what you're doing. And
thanks,
I know,
brother.
It's going to be a
team effort. You know it.
All right. Cheers, mate. I'll let you go.
Talk soon. You go get a glass of warm milk and get some rest.
Well, I'm not done here at the pub yet. Let's, you know, we're going to celebrate St. Patty's Day. It's what a good Irish boy's got to do, right?
Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with it. Thanks,
yeah.
Rick. We'll talk soon.
Good talking to you, Rick.
Well, thanks a lot, Peter. I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know how busy it gets for you leading up to these cards, and just give me a quick pitch for the card coming up. Tell people where it is, when it is, and where they can get their tickets. Because if I'm not mistaken, the last one sold out, right?
Pretty close, yeah, pretty close. First of all, I do want to echo what Rick said and say, you know, thank you so much for doing this. I know that you're a busy guy, and it's nice of you that you have a love of the sport and that you're putting your time and effort into doing this and growing the sport. Because, like Rick said, if we can put more athletes in the seats, we can get more athletes going, we can pay them better, and that's what it's all about, is making the athletes from here successful in the sport. Now, as for the ECC coming up, ECC Apocalypse, Martin Blaze made a fantastic poster for us. I was just really, really impressed with that. Agrophotography that Martin Blaze owns. The guy's a genius. But our show is April 5th at the Halifax Forum Multipurpose Room, ticketpro.ca for tickets. You can call me at 902-830-9111, or you can go to the Forum box office. But ticketpro.ca is probably the easiest thing to do. And or go to your local MMA gym. A lot of those guys will be selling tickets. I'm telling you guys, if you haven't seen MMA, you got to see it live. It is unbelievable.
Agreed. Like I said, that last card, it was a perfect storm. Everything came together that night, and it was really the thing that sealed the deal for me that I wanted to do this podcast, because as I've said before, there's no way that you can go to Boston Pizza and eat some soggy wings and some lukewarm beer and watch the UFC and have half the fun that you can have by going to the forum to watch ECC on April 5th. That's where the smart money is. Go there, you're going to have a much better time than watching any large-scale promotion on television.
And thank God for those fighters that give a cage for our sport. But I've been to the UFC, and I spent, you know, $300 or $400 on a ticket, and I was smart enough away that it was a toss-up whether I watched the fight or the big screen. I paid a couple $1,000 by the time I bought my flight and stayed at the hotel. And, you know, some of those guys are cautious. Some of the fights aren't that exciting. You know, there were some good fights in the card, certainly, but, you know, at the local shows, these guys go for it. There is no holding back. These guys are trying to, you know, they're trying to take the other guy's head home in a bag. And there aren't any bad seats at the multipurpose room. Like, you can sit as far back against the wall as you can. You can still see those fights pretty clear. If you want to go see live action like that, you got to go check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. Well, thank you so much, Peter. We're gonna play a segment now with a lady by the name of Amy Pitt. I went up to Moncton before New Brunswick, I should say, lost its ability to hold MMA cards a few months ago. And I saw her. Sorry, what was that? Oh, sorry. I went up there and I saw a fight, and Amy fought Amanda Robertson, and when the ladies walked out and got in the cage, the pop from the audience was absolutely shocking. I mean, you'd swear that like a big name UFC fighter had stepped into the cage, and it was really shocking to me how warmly the audience received the female fighters and how passionate they were about how they were performing. I mean, they put on a hell of a fight, there's no doubt about it, but there was something special about that, and I knew she worked for a local radio station, and I'd seen some stuff that she posted online. So I had an awesome chat with her. She does the morning show for C103 in Moncton, and she wasn't able to talk this late at night, obviously, because she probably starts her day at 3 a.m. So I pre-recorded a conversation with her yesterday, and it was awesome to hear her perspective, as a female fighter, and somebody who was like 35 years old with twin boys, who was going through a divorce and took on stepping into the cage to fight amateur MMA. It was really inspirational story. So we're going to play that one now, and then I'll team up with my buddy Skippy to wrap things up. So thanks again, Peter. I really appreciate you coming on and helping us out on this first episode.
Thank you for having me, and again, really glad that you're doing this to support MMA in Atlantic Canada.
My pleasure. Anytime, Pete. Talk soon.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Boy.
My man, Skippy, time flies.
I'll tell you what, the reaction the fans are given for your show, it is amazing. I mean, from Germany to California, throughout Canada, even in Thailand, I'm getting tweets, texts, messages on Facebook, on Twitter. Everybody is loving this show.
Well, people got to get over and like our page on Facebook. It's The BS Show Canada. And I'm just sitting here now as you're talking, and it's just going blink, 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 blink with people like page, like page, like page, and I'm loving to see that. I think we've increased by about 25 likes in the amount of time that we were talking to Rick there. So yeah, the BS Show on Facebook. Get over there, folks. Like us, follow us, share it. Get the word out to as many people as you possibly can, because I think we really have the opportunity to band together, and all of us do a little tiny bit to support the sport that we really, really love in Atlantic Canada. Are we ready to roll with Amy's interview?
You got it. Are you ready? We'll play it now.
Awesome. You pull the trigger.
Hello.
Amy, tell me you can hear me.
I can hear you, buddy. We got this.
That's about like the 10th attempt. We finally connected.
Yeah, not too bad, though. Not too bad. That's persistence, right? Not a problem.
Exactly. Well, thanks for joining us on the BS Show. I'll tell you why I wanted to talk to you. Several months ago, I made a trip up to Moncton, New Brunswick, good old Monkey Town.
Awesome. Great place to be.
And I was attending, what was it, an Elite One card. And it was a fun card. Until yourself. And who was it you fought that night?
Amanda Robinson.
Amanda Robinson.
Yeah.
Stepped into the cage, and the roof damn near lifted off the place. I've been following MMA for quite a while. I've gotten an opportunity to see a good amount of it live over the past 5 or 6 years. And I got to say, there was a pop in the audience when you guys, very unlike what I was used to seeing in regional MMA. Could you feel that when you were in the cage?
Well, you're so focused on your own fight, right? But I know the excitement building up to it. Like, it was the first female amateur, both from, you know, from local. And, yeah, I had my own excitement going on, but you could tell there was some electricity.
Okay, let's back it up quite a bit. How did you end up in the cage that night? That wasn't your first fight, is that correct?
No, that was my second. That was my second fight. Actually, when I came out to New Brunswick, I originally came to St. John. I was just looking to stay in shape, and I was working as a piping designer. At my lunchtime, I went down to a local gym in St. John. It happened to be with Britt Nickerson at Okudan Fight Club, just to stay in shape, and he started the fire, you know. He's the one that really got me interested, involved. And then I moved to Moncton, and I found some gyms here. And I had the passion by then. I wanted to get in the ring before I was 36, and my first fight was June 22nd, and June 23rd was my birthday.
I'm glad you said that, because they say never ask a lady your age, and I didn't want to broach the subject.
Actually, that's the safest way for me to put it out there, for sure.
So you say when you moved to St. John, where did you move from?
Alberta. I was in Medicine Hat, Alberta. Just came out on an adventure. I had finished my computer-aided drafting, and I got a job working for the refinery there.
And what was your martial arts experience or your combat sports experience before that?
I had done a little bit of kickboxing in Alberta, but nothing serious.
Since you were a kid, or just
yeah,
as a fitness
since
thing?
I was a kid, I'd done a little bit. I've always been in shape. I've always just stayed active and stuff, but I'd never really been serious and put any real drive into it until St. John.
And then you walked into to Britt's place in St. John, and that's where you started taking a more serious look at, was it just kickboxing, or was he kind of enticing you into MMA?
More into MMA, I guess. We were doing lots of grappling, and he was just just such a supportive guy and totally sold me on it and said that's what I got to do.
And now Amanda Ryle trains out of that gym. Was she training when you were there?
Once I went down for a seminar with Ryan Jimmo was there. He's been down there twice, so it wasn't the last time, the time before. And she was there then. I think that's the first time we had met.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting that I heard about you, and now you're connected to Britt, and I met Amanda several months ago when I was in St. John promoting the Cubicle to the Cage television show. And we chatted then, and I was like, is this guy kind of like, is this the focal point for WMMA, for women's MMA in New Brunswick? I mean, any reason why there seems to be girls coming out of there?
Yeah, I don't know. He just, it's just the way he is as well. He's just very inspiring. And then I was lucky enough to find that here in the gyms at Spitfire and at Victory as well. I mean, Tony Doolin and Shane, too, are, like, unbelievable. I've just been so fortunate. And I think everyone knows that we lack female MMA here. And I think people do their best to help us to push forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've only seen possibly two. I saw one pro MMA fight in Halifax a few years ago, and then I saw you and Amanda fight in Moncton. And I don't see many women in the gym. I mean, Halifax has quite a few MMA gyms, but I don't really know anybody that's got more than one or two women that's training for MMA. And I'm sure you're aware that amateur MMA was just legalized in Nova Scotia a couple of months ago. We had our first card with four amateur fights a couple of months ago.
I came for that. Great card.
Oh, you were down for that one. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't you find that the amateurs looked just like the pros?
Absolutely. The level of training, the intensity that people put in now, it's incredible. It's incredible. They're just so dedicated. And that's another killer thing with Moncton or with New Brunswick situation right now. Just the I know how hard I trained, and it wasn't half as much as most of the other guys that I went to the gym with.
Yeah, and I mean that I'm a firm believer, and I'm going to talk about this an awful lot over the course of the year on this show. I think amateur MMA is the saving grace and the future of mixed martial arts in Atlantic Canada, because there were a couple of promotions. But it meant guys and girls being thrown into a pro fight right off the bat. And as you said, if they're bringing in fighters from anywhere outside the region, or even fighters from within the region in established gyms, I mean, those guys are so serious and have trained so hard and trained so well these days that it's not going to work for a guy who isn't prepared to step into a pro MMA fight against a lot of these guys. But guys who are 0-0, being able to feel much more comfortable getting into an amateur fight, I mean, those women and those men are going to be the future of the sport, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like you said, exactly, because it's so much mental as much as the physical training, right? That mental game has to be there, too. It has to be even, and, you know, you have to have a nice start.
And so both of your fights to date have been amateur, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Any interest about continuing that, or are you on permanent hiatus right now? Well, you didn't retire. I'm going to say you didn't retire at the end of your fight, but you did do the old George St. Pierre and seemed to indicate you were going to take some time away.
Right. Well, my last fight, I had a lot of stuff going on. I was changing jobs, separating from my husband, buying a house, getting in the cage. There's a lot of stuff. So I've got new work and I've got things kind of together, but I'm going to doing some boxing at Barley's right now, so that's kind of interesting as well. But you know, never say never, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you have kids as well, do you not?
I do. I have 2 7-year-olds.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and we're actually starting karate next week because they want to do that. So I'm very excited to be doing that with them.
And do they grapple already?
They've done a little bit of wrestling, and they want to get into that some more, but they're pretty excited to start the karate now, too. So it's another little road we're following, so very excited.
Yeah, I need to get this podcast out ASAP, because I know a couple of whiny fighters who who really need to sit back and take a look at you at age 35 with twin 7-year-olds and being a single mom, putting in the time to get into the cage. I think there's a few guys out there who could learn a lesson or two.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And also, Boyd, I do want to say how much I appreciate you doing this. And this is great for the sport. Everything helps, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said a couple of years ago, a high tide floats all boats. And we tend to be a little insular in MMA. We dedicate ourselves to a gym or a gym or two, depending on where we're training, and that tends to be our world. And when I produced the Cubicle to the Cage television show, I got to meet all of these awesome people from all of these gyms that are not always super friendly with each other because they have conflicting goals and they're all after the same attention and they're all after the same students. And I said, I need to find a way that I can step outside of all that and just shine a light on all of the mixed martial artists and the trainers and the gyms in Atlantic Canada. And that's one the second reason why I reached out to you, because you were in New Brunswick and I knew you were a captivating person and a well-spoken person and somebody who's put in the time in the gym and in the MMA community that you could shed some light on what's happening up in New Brunswick.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation right now, absolutely, with the MMA being stopped, being basically shut down right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because, I mean, our audience through MMA Madhouse is international.
Right.
Quite a few listeners in the United States and Western Canada, and they may not be aware of the situation that we have going on down here, but right now in the four Atlantic provinces, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland, Labrador, you can only fight MMA, amateur or pro, in Nova Scotia, correct?
Right. That's the situation that I think, too. It's been a very confusing situation as well, but, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
So take your time and walk me through what you know about the situation in New Brunswick.
So what I know in New Brunswick is that there basically was a bylaw written that said that it was about boxing, and it didn't actually have the word MMA in the bylaw, and so after some issues with promoters disagreeing with governance, that this was kind of not looked at. It was brought up after there was some problems, and now it is being shut down.
And shut down indefinitely, as far as we know right now. I mean, once in a while I see somebody who's associated with the MMA community up there make a post about, oh, big news coming soon, but it seems to be the whole Dana White big news coming soon. It either ends up being no news or news that isn't really that big.
Yeah, I think it's they bark a lot, right? And
yeah.
So it gets a little hard to really trust what's going on, but as I hear that the government is trying to do the pro and they're hoping to get a board for amateur, and hopefully what this is a case of is a phoenix rising from the ashes. Hopefully what this does is strengthen the MMA here, make it more regulated, make the fighters safer. I'm hoping that all it does, you know, it's kind of a rough situation, but it makes it better in the end.
Yeah, I hear you, and I'll put a disclaimer on this right away and say I'm by no means an expert on any of this stuff, and in the spirit of this show being called the BS show, this all could be BS, but I've heard for years criticism of the way MMA was run in New Brunswick, that it seemed to be very cowboy, and if you wanted to fight in Nova Scotia, you damn well need a letter from God. I mean, they do blood testing up the wazoo, you need MRIs and CAT scans and just tons and tons and tons of regulations, which is great for the safety of the fighters, but also very expensive and cumbersome if you're trying to fight here. But guys were walking into New Brunswick fights day of with no blood work.
Yeah, that's terrifying. That's terrifying to think. So that's all I can hope is that it is a positive that comes out of it, because it's got to be the safety of the fighters, and the gyms and the promoters need to be responsible, and hopefully that is all that comes of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody out there listening to this knows different or disagrees with what I say, by all means get in touch, and we'll have you on the show, because I'm not looking to attack anybody or misrepresent anybody. We just want to have an open conversation and get the truth out there. So
yeah, call me too. I'd love to know.
And I think you're 100% right that this could be a case of as you called it, the phoenix rising, because you don't know what you got till it's gone. And there's a lot of gyms and there's a lot of fighters and there's a lot of trainers in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Prince Edward Island, certainly, who would love to compete in New Brunswick if given the opportunity. And now that that's gone away, I'm not going to lie, it's freaking awesome for me here in Halifax because I'm getting to see the absolute best fighters in the region competing in my my back door on Extreme Cage Combat. But now that all the guys up in New Brunswick are having to travel down here all the time to fight, I think it's definitely going to put pressure up there for them to get a commission, to get the regulations that they need, and to get a good, healthy promotion running up there again.
Absolutely. I don't see why not. In the end of the day, you know, for the government, it's financial, and there's money to be made. So it's a good thing for them to do it in that aspect as well. And on my side, it's heartbreaking because I was fortunate enough that I was actually taking a break at this time. But, you know, I trained with a lot of amazing people that weren't, and they focus so hard and work so hard and bring it back.
Yeah, a couple of months ago, I got to attend an Extreme Cage Combat card here in Halifax, and I've attended quite a few of them, and some of them have been good, and some of them have been not so good, and I got to tell you, this card was the best MMA that I have ever seen in my life. I mean, I was blown away at the caliber of the fights. That's the one that you attended here in
yeah,
Halifax.
Yeah, it was my first one for ECC. It was great. It was an amazing show, so well put together, too, and just, yeah.
I know, and I mean, I think it's probably not a coincidence that the absence of MMA elsewhere in the region is probably one of the reasons why those guys are able to pull together such great cards.
Oh yeah, I think so, absolutely, right? They got it all right now. They're definitely able to pick and choose.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Let's hope they stay honest. I'm gonna have Peter on the show. As a matter of fact, we're pre-recording this segment, and I may actually have him on before I air this on the premiere episode of the BS show. So we'll definitely talk about that.
Can't wait to hear.
So let's talk a little bit more about your training. I wanted to talk about where you can train in New Brunswick. I know you haven't been there your whole life, but where are the places that you've trained or that you've heard about? If somebody is interested in trying out MMA, whether it's recreationally or if they want to join a fight team, where are the best places in the major centers?
Well, for me, right, I'm just biased. I'm going to say where I've gone. So if you're in St. John, I'm saying Okutan. And in Moncton, Spitfire is my home. That's where I did so much of my training, mentally, physically, emotionally. I cried in front of everybody at Spitfire. Also at Victory Jiu-Jitsu, Shane Wright.
That's Shane, yeah, right. I'm actually dying to have Shane on the show sometime soon as well.
Awesome. Great guy, great gym. And, you know, as much as the coaches were amazing, every single training partner has your back. That's the hardest part about me, I think, not training right now. It was family. So it's very hard, you know, to not be with them all the time. And at Barley's Boxing, I can't say enough about that place as well. It's just amazing. Just being so fortunate to the gyms that I've gone to. And get out there, girls, because it's awesome and it's the best thing for you to know.
There's also another gym. Is it Fredericton or St. John? Is it Evolution?
Evolution, yeah, I've heard nothing but good stuff about that gym as well. I haven't been there, I haven't trained there, but I've heard amazing things about Evolution as well.
And I know, I think it's actually your opponent, Amanda, and I don't know if it's her boyfriend, David Thorne? Mike Thorne,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think they're living up in Sussex, and they're trying to get some like-minded people together and do some training as well. So if you live in that part of the province, definitely look those guys up.
That's great. Yeah, it's always so good to hear, hey, where they open, started up.
I know. I'm following them on Facebook, and I mean, they're starting off small time. I know they were looking for some gear, and I think some people stepped up and actually donated some gear to them, and they're kind of having classes only when they can get enough people together. And I mean, that kind of grassroots passion is the stuff that I really want to see people supporting. This podcast is on MMA Madhouse Radio, and their motto has always been support local MMA. I mean, you can watch the UFC, you can watch Bellator, World Series of Fighting, whatever you want to watch, but the people you should be supporting are the people who are in your your back door. The people who you're seeing pounding the roads, running when they're cutting weight and getting in shape for fights. The people who are out there working hard in the local gyms and keeping all the martial arts schools and gyms open in the area. Those are the people that you should be supporting either through sponsorship or friendship or going in there and training with them if you want to. I mean, you don't have to be a pro fighter to walk into a gym and have some fun and offer yourself up even as a training partner or a friend.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I couldn't agree with that anymore. It's vocal and passion.
So it sounds like you actually had a fair number of women training partners. Is that accurate?
When I was at Spitfire, I basically had one, and when I was, yeah, at Victory 2, there was one girl there that was a wrestler, so I think they do have more women now at Victory, and also at Spitfire, they do have quite a few women, just not, at the time, it wasn't in the fighters class.
Right.
So, but I think they're starting to get more. So I don't know if there's so much in MMA, but more fitness, but still, once we get in there, I'm going to get sucked right into it.
Right on. Well, awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Amy. And I know this is going to be the first of many. When you see my name pop up on your Facebook very soon, it's guaranteed going to be me asking you to come back on, because I think this has been this has been an awesome start into, I think, what's going to be an awesome year of us uncovering and showing people what's available in Atlantic Canada for MMA. And especially with the situation with no legalized MMA in New Brunswick right now, it's going to be one of the most exciting ones to follow, I think, because the potential there is awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm honored to be on the show for sure. I really do appreciate this opportunity, and let's have some positive conversations about it when it's back up very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your time. You go and chase down those two boys.
I better see what they're up to, yeah.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Boy, what a great interview. Love it. I love it.
I told her she took my MMA journalist virginity.
Oh, that's funny. That's, you know, I like your outlook. Obviously, you know, you're willing to admit, you know, you've trained, you fought, you're a fan, but you don't know it all. You're willing to learn more. You want to ask a bunch of questions. And that's what I think is going to be the greatest thing about your show, is you're going to be able to not only you learn, but your fans learn about so many different aspects of amateur and local MMA that most people might never get a chance to really delve into and learn about.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great mentors in my life was a man by the name of Dick Buehler, and he was a theater professor at Memorial University in Newfoundland, where I went to school. And he had a business card, like all of the professors in the university, but his had one word on it. It was a blank white piece of paper with one word, and it said, generalist. And he told me one time that he just had an insatiable thirst for knowledge. And I never, ever, ever forgot that. And it's kind of how I've lived my life. I'm extremely happy to say that I don't know everything or even a lot about mixed martial arts. Because the moment I feel like I know a lot about something, it ceases to be interesting to me. So I like surrounding myself with smart people, with talented people, with knowledgeable people. And I just get such a rush out of learning from those people. And this show, and enormous thanks to you guys, this show is going to put me in touch with a lot of those people who have that history, people like Peter and people like Amy who've gone a path that very, very, very few people have had an opportunity to go. And I'm going to be able to learn so much from their journeys. And it's going to be a fantastic year, man. I just can't thank you guys enough.
We're very, very honored, Boyd, after the product that you produced with Heminghaus for Cubicle to the Cage and Peter and the Titans and all the cubes. You gave fans, I say, and I've said it before, you know, I don't have to double take my words, the greatest look at MMA that has ever been put on film, whether you want to call it a documentary, a reality, a show, whatever. That was by far the best look. So if you have that passion there, I can't imagine the interviews we're going to get. Oh, it's going to be a great year.
It's going to be a great year. It's fantastic. And like I said to you earlier, I need to put out a special thanks to our sponsors for the BS show. When we were starting to pull this together, I knew I didn't need much money to get this off the ground, but I mean, quite frankly, I did need a little. So I sent out 7 emails asking local companies if they'd be interested in supporting me. I explained a little bit about what I wanted to do and how I wanted to shine a light on mixed martial artists in the area and promote the sport. And out of 7 emails that I sent out, 6 people wrote back with, yes, 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 we're on board immediately. And the other guy said, I'm rebranding my company. Please call me again in a couple of months. So the support is there, and it's awesome to see that. And I'm hoping that once we get the attention of enough people and people realize that there's some value in companies associating themselves, not with this show, but with local athletes, that those guys are going to have a much easier time getting sponsorships and helping them out as they follow their dreams. It's just it's fantastic stuff, man. You guys do absolutely super work at Madhouse, and I'm just thrilled to be part of the family. Give a big thanks to the Madman when you see him for me.
I will tell Carl, I know he's listening right now because he's cracking up. And for all the fans, you guys want to know these great sponsors that have stepped up to support the BS Show. You can go to The BS Show Canada on Facebook, or if you go to the show player, whether it's on Madhouse or Blog Talk or RearNakedSmoke.net, wherever you find the players, Facebook, if you open that link underneath the player of the show, every one of our sponsors is hyperlinked. Follow them. Go to their pages, give them a like, you know, tell them thank you, you know, show them some love, because this is what it takes. It takes a community to get together to help build this sport, and I'm very honored, and so is MMA Madhouse, to be part of this with you, Boyd.
Yeah, and eyeballs are a real commodity these days, and I don't know if people really appreciate that when it comes to social media. So, I mean, I need everybody who's listening to this to go over to Facebook. We don't have our Twitter account up and running yet, but we will soon. So go over to Facebook and like the BS Show Canada Facebook page. Have everybody in your gym go like the page. If your great-great-grandmother has regrettably passed away, create a Facebook account for her and go like it under that account, because the more people we have liking this page, the more inherent value there is for sponsors and for other people who want to be involved in the show. And once we have that, we can start passing that on then to the gyms and to the athletes so that they can pursue their dreams, and that's what this is all about. I hope we can play our sponsor reel for the show one more time as we go out, Skippy. But before we do, I would just like to thank Madhouse, absolutely, and obviously number one, Draco, who was our key equipment sponsor for the Cubicle to the Cage television show. Everyone go check that out on RadX television. If you're in Canada, still working on bringing it to the U.S. I'd also like to thank Farmbox Films. Luke and Jock over there are helping me out with some in-kind support. Reposales.ca, Jack Cameron, Hemmings House Pictures, my brothers, and Wilson's Titanium, perhaps the biggest supporter of MMA in Nova Scotia. It's been an absolute riot. I had no idea how I was going to fill an hour with this show, and here we are sitting at an hour and 50 minutes.
You know, Boyd, this is something you're just meant to do. You know, Peter, great interview. I am a huge fan of Rick. I know he thinks I'm what does he call me, an ass clown? But I love the guy. You know, I love the guy. He's so real. I mean, he's been around different sports. I love this new arm wrestling. And, you know, this is something I mean, every Monday is going to be a great Monday.
Yeah, every Monday is going to be a great Monday is right. And I'm dying to get into this this trash talk segment that Rick wants to do, because the guy has some ideas that just seem completely out of left field until you sit and you listen to him for a while. And it starts turning into one of those, like, magic eye pictures that were popular when we were kids. You stare at it long enough, you start seeing the picture. Well, I tell you, Rick's got a few of those, so I'm very interested, agree or disagree with him, I'm interested in hearing his perspective.
I am going to, I definitely already a fan before he's even done an official segment, so.
Yeah, and to throw out another teaser, I mean, I'm obviously going to have my good buddy Steve Goodfellow on the show. I mean, obviously a brilliant and successful guy who is going to definitely pick up a heavy load and help me with a lot of the analysis and the research and the interviewing that we're going to be doing on this program. So look forward to having Steve on sometime pretty soon. I'll tease out next week. I think we're not going to have a show. It's going to be my birthday on Monday. I got some family coming to town, and I'm going to have some special time with them. So the week after, I am looking to bring on Gavin Tucker, premier mixed martial artist in Atlantic Canada, currently putting on an enormous push to be on the UFC card when they come to Halifax, Nova Scotia this fall. I can't think of a more deserving athlete than Gavin to have that shot. And he also was the matchmaker for the upcoming Extreme Cage Combat card. So I'm dying to get his idea on how those matches are going to play out. And I'm reaching out to a couple of guys in Prince Edward Island, and hopefully going to have a very experienced fighter and longtime mixed martial artist, Richard Arsenal, on the show in 2 weeks' time. So everybody like the BS Show Facebook page and tune in 2 Mondays from now for the next step on this awesome, awesome journey.
Boyd, enjoyed the show. You have a great night, brother. To all the great fans, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Thank you so much, Gibby.
Hello.
Amy, tell me you can hear me.
I can hear you, buddy. We got this.
Wrong file.
Oh, there we go.
Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Draco Impact Sports, providing top-quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farmbox Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.